Hey, CSIGO's Rachel Provan here, and on today's episode, we're going to go into smart goals. So in a time where it's really important for CS to be able to demonstrate its value, it's really important that we have effective strategies to achieve our goals. And smart goals, they're often not the best way to do that. So we'll get into why your brain struggles with them, why they often get abandoned, plus some tips on how to set goals effectively so that they actually get done and you get to feel great about yourself. That's all coming up next, right here on Psychology of Customer Success. Stay tuned.
Humans don't think or behave like computers. You can't just run a command and get them to do what you want them to do. So why are you still basing your CS strategy based solely on logic? I'm Rachel Provan, CS leadership coach, award-winning CS strategist, and certified psych nerd. I teach CS leaders how to build and scale world-class CS departments using a combination of strategy, leadership, and mindset, using my secret weapon, psychology. Come join me every Wednesday for Psychology of Customer Success, where we'll dive into why people do the things they do, what motivates them, and the effect that has on your CS strategy, team dynamics, and executive presence. Make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure to share it with your CS bestie. Talk soon, and here's to your success.
Right. All right, the question of the day. Are smart goals stupid? Christy Valtaruso posted something on LinkedIn last week about if you don't have smart goals for each of your softwares that you buy, you're probably going to churn as a customer. I do not disagree with this. I think it's an excellent point, but it actually got me thinking about the way smart goals are used in business settings and in leadership. And I think it's fine if smart goals are something that works for you personally. But what I've found is that they really don't work very well. And we're going to dig into why that is today. A little bit of brain science, as well as how it applies for customer success. This isn't something that will bother everyone, but at least for me, when I'm asked to set a smart goal, having to stop and think about each word that isn't really a natural way of speaking, I get caught up in trying to, remember what each letter stands for. All right, smart, strategic, measurable, translate that into simpler speech, transform it into a question, because otherwise I'm just like stating something at myself, like time bound. Okay. Well, the brain loves questions. So if you say, how long do I need to complete this? It will give you an answer versus if you just look at it and say, time bound, it just kind of blinks at you. If a brain could blink. And by the time I've done all that for even one of these letters, I'm trying to remember what the hell I was thinking about in the first place and reconnect to that idea of the goal. And it really makes it hard to get any sort of creative thinking going. So I think it's mainly because these words aren't natural language. And those extra mental gymnastics, like transforming time bound into when, It gets in the way of actual creativity and of good planning. I actually think a lot of the elements of smart goals are really good. You don't want to just say, I want to run a marathon. Okay, when? How are you going to get there? Which one? You need to know details about what you want to achieve. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. It's too big. It's too vague. I like the idea of breaking it down into smaller chunks. What I'm going to do for you here is what I do for myself, the way I set goals and the way I've translated smart goals so that they're a little bit easier for me to answer. So I'm going to go over it with just the questions and then I'll show you how it relates to smart goals. So if you, like me, struggle a little bit with translating those into something that makes sense to you and actually setting goals with them, here is what I use. So I say, is this my number one priority, first of all? Does the goal I'm setting move the needle on my number one priority? If it doesn't, why do I need to do this now? Why am I setting this goal in the first place? And does it need to be done now? Before we get into anything else, I think that's a hugely important question. You can't have more than one first priority. You can't have five P1s. That's the whole point. Is your number one priority? does this affect your number one priority? You can have more than one thing that will affect it. You can have more than one driver. For something like NRR, there can be different things that can affect that. But it's really the most effective to pick one project at a time. Try and move the needle in one way at a time, because trying to do a bunch of different projects at once, you're not really going to achieve anything. Does this make sense to work on right now? If the answer is yes, great. What am I trying to do? What specifically? How do I know when I'm done? When can I check the box? How will I know? Can this be done? Is this possible? How likely is this to actually happen? Is this, that would be nice, or am I being realistic here? Does the result actually matter? Sometimes we get wrapped up because we think one thing is going to affect another. I'm trying to think of something. Measuring support tickets. You can feel like if they go down, that you've accomplished something. But if they go down, sometimes it means people are just ghosting you and have given up. Or you could say, I want to build out a playbook for our onboarding. That's great. Do you have something that works? Because if you don't, the results, you're building out a playbook, doesn't really matter. The result of having a playbook doesn't help until you know what the standard should be. There are things that can feel important because we hear other people talking about them, but you have to stop and think, is this really relevant for my situation, my company, my customers, my team? And finally, what is a realistic date for this to happen? Because there is such a thing, what is a good way to try and figure out how long something is going to take? Because you don't want to just leave it up in the air. That's even worse. Then you'll never get to it. But what I would suggest, and this is going to be painful, instead of trying to figure out how long it's going to take, if you've estimated the number of hours, great. Go back 2 weeks in your calendar and look at it. And now try and figure out where the time to work on that would go in what is realistically your whole day. If you had decided this 2 weeks ago, when would you have worked on this? What would you have had to not work on? And is that something that can actually happen? Is that something you can put to the side? Where does this fit into your life? Because I have a feeling you're not sitting around twiddling your thumbs with a lot of time on your hands. So most of the time, if you are going to say yes to something, you're saying no to something else, whether you realize it or not. But that's why we ask, is this a top priority? Because you are going to have to switch something. And it cannot be sleep. And it cannot be taking a few minutes to relax. Because honestly, your work will suffer. You are not, even if you were a machine, everything has its limits. And we tend to think, yeah, that's true for other people, but I'm strong, I can power through. You can, to a degree, and then you will hit a wall. And whether you call that burnout, whether you call it exhaustion, or whether you just call that making mistakes. Burnout is something that sounds like it happens to other people, and it's hard to actually picture. But what if it's just you drop a plate, you drop something big, you lose track of what you were trying to do because there are too many things and you're too tired and your brain is full, and you make a huge F up. That is the more likely scenario. So when you're thinking, I'm tough, I'll power through, hey, I think it too. Just be aware that you're going to pay for this one way or another. Okay. So you're looking back at your calendar, you're deciding what you're going to swap out and what a realistic timeline is. I love my cognitive biases, right? So there is, of course, a couple for this. The first one is the planning fallacy, which is basically that we tend to think things are going to be a lot easier and take a lot less time than they actually are going to. But we tend to look at things as though everything's going to go the right way. Like, I tease my mom sometimes that because she'll say, it takes a half an hour to get to your apartment from mine. Never in the history has it taken a half an hour. Maybe if it were 4 o'clock in the morning and the streets were empty, it might take a half an hour. But in New York traffic, it absolutely takes an hour. We tend to think of things as if the roads are going to be completely clear and not a stoplight in sight. We don't think of the possible real life stuff that's going to get in the way. What are my other competing priorities? How long do those take? Am I reliant on another person to do this? Are they always reliable? Is their schedule going to be up to me? all these things just can factor in. So just be aware of that when you're planning this. This is not to make it feel like things are impossible. It's just so that you don't end up setting an unrealistic goal and then feeling like crap when you fail because you're trying to do something that wasn't possible in the first place with your particular setup right now. Nothing changes if nothing changes. Another important part of this is putting in buffers. What do I mean by buffers? Buffers are if you are on a diet. I hate using food stuff, but it's an easy metaphor for me because I did too much dieting in my misspent youth. But if you were on a diet, you're much more likely to succeed if you have a cheat day or a cheat meal or whatever it is. Because the reality is, you're not going to be able to comply 100% of the time. Our willpower, motivation, whatever you want to call it, is a finite resource. It runs out on the days where you just don't have it in you to work toward this goal, to eat a salad when you're starving. Fine. There is built-in breaks. There's built-in buffer time. There's a built-in cheeseburger. There's a built-in pizza so that you can still enjoy your life and not constantly feel like you're failing. Because if you're setting yourself up for 100% compliance, you're going to feel like crap about yourself when you inevitably don't do it, even though it's unrealistic. There are things that I talk a lot about in CSLA when we get to the mindset area, which is cognitive distortions. And this is basically when your brain is lying to you. And there are a lot of very specific patterns and ways that your brain lies to you. And once you learn them and once you learn how to spot them and how to analyze them, it gets a lot easier to realize when that's happening so you can reset and get more realistic again. But in something where you're trying to achieve a goal, do something you haven't done before, it's very easy for what are called black and white thinking, discounting the positive, and all or nothing cognitive distortions. They all basically mean the same thing. It's like you either succeeded or failed. There's no gray. It doesn't matter what you achieved in the meantime. If you didn't do it exactly as you stated, exactly as you planned, it's a failure. You're a failure. And it can sound ridiculous when someone else is saying it, but in our heads, it sounds really real and very believable. And we believe these things about ourselves and it sticks with us. And it actually sabotages us making progress in the areas of our lives that we care about. So this is why building buffers in are important. I like to factor in what I call 15 minutes of bullshit. I'm sorry for swearing, but it's going to happen on occasion. So 15 minutes of bullshit. That's basically leave 15 minutes before you think you have to account for whatever bullshit is going to come along and mess things up. Whether it's a train delay, whether it's a car accident, whether it's you're going to realize halfway down the block that you were wearing two different shoes. That happened to me when I was going back to work after having my first kid. Yes, I got halfway down the block in two different shoes. These stupid things happen. And the fact is, apart from the shoes, maybe you are not in control of most of the things that are between you and where you want to get to. If you haven't noted, there are going to be other teams with other priorities. CS is not always going to be the first priority. In fact, it almost never is. So just factoring in, hey, I think this is how long this is going to take me, and add 25%. That's a fairly safe bet. If it's renovations, then double it. The brain is optimistic. It can't factor in invisible barriers that are going to come in when you're setting a goal. So one of the things that is worth asking is, what are some obstacles that might come up? What might get in the way of my achieving this? One of the ways I really like to look at this is like a kickoff call with a customer when you're trying to develop a success plan. Ask them, what are you trying to achieve? And I'm always saying to my CS leaders, begin with the end in mind. That's not my line, but I'll look up who it is. Franklin Covey. Okay. So what are you trying to achieve? Begin with the end in mind. Before you start anything, to make sure you're charting a path the right way, you have to know what you're trying to achieve. So begin with the end in mind. We know what we're trying to achieve. How do we know when we get there? How will you know when you've achieved that? Is there a metric you're looking at? Something that I really like to do is, how would you know when things are moving in the right direction? To me, that's where I like to consider onboarding to be complete. Once they see that, oh, I see this metric, that means things are moving in the right direction, whether that's things are starting to go up when they used to go down or vice versa, or people save a specific amount of time in their work every single day. It'll vary depending on your product and use cases. But really, what is that first indication that things are going right? Because until you get that, you're wasting your time. You have to hit that marker, and that will tell you're out of onboarding and on to adoption. Even if it's just for yourself, even if you're able to see, okay, what I'm doing is working, it makes sense to double down. It makes sense to keep working like this, because otherwise you're going to lose motivation. So bringing it back to my translation of it, the what are you trying to do? How do you know when it's done? Can this be done? Does it actually matter? And what is a realistic date? Here's how the questions I gave translate to typical SMART goals. Specific just turns into, what are you trying to do? What outcome do you want? Measurable, how do you know when you get there? What metric are you looking? Achievable, can this be done? How likely is it to actually happen? Relevant, do the results actually matter? Or am I just being influenced by what other people are talking about? And time-bound, have I taken a realistic date and added 15 days of bullshit, as it were? Your brain's going to love those questions. It's going to come up with good answers. The issue with SMART goals is we don't tend to come back and address them. We set them once, and then maybe we check in on them, maybe we don't. One of the main issues that's been proven to have with them is, at the very least, they're uninspiring. We don't tend to set SMART goals that are above and beyond what's expected. When you only set goals for what's realistic, you really inhibit any ability for growth. You're going to work to meet the goal you set. Great. There are some studies. They basically show that SMART goals lead to mediocrity, and they're hard to get excited about. Most companies that I have seen or worked at have a tendency to set either OKRs or SMART goals at the beginning of the year, and then maybe there's a couple meetings about them in January or February. They're very much like New Year's resolutions. And then after that, you drop them because you realize it's just maybe not that realistic, or you have to pivot your focus. And that doesn't feel that great, especially when it comes around to performance reviews and you're looking at, okay, what goals did we originally set? And you can see that you're nowhere near them, or maybe they're not even applicable anymore. That's not a great way to run a team. Goals, for you to work on them, for you to actually achieve them, goals require emotion. SMART goals, not that much emotion attached. They're kind of boring. Versus the one that I particularly like is BHAGs, which are big, hairy, audacious goals. A little bit vivid there. But it's said that we, and I'm not sure who said it, I have looked it up and I can't find it, but we overestimate what we can do in a day and we underestimate what we can do in a year. And I have found this to be very true. I only started setting BHAGs for myself once I started my own business. And they honestly, they felt silly. I was told, what would be something that if a goal that if you set it, you knew this coaching, this training, whatever it is, really worked for you? Like something that you're a little embarrassed to say out loud because you're not sure you can do it. That's a fun goal because it's going to require you to think out of the box a little bit. When you set a goal that is realistic and time-bound and all that stuff, you're looking at it from the same perspective. You're saying, all right, this is what I've achieved in the past. I know I can achieve this in the future because I'm just going to do what I did before. Maybe do it a little harder or something, or a little longer. And there's that other saying of what got you here won't get you there. You don't get to really the next level without trying some stuff. Trying some things you haven't tried before, not being sure of the outcome, but knowing that what you've done in the past isn't going to get it done. So something that is a little scarier, a little crazier, is more likely to inspire people and more likely to help you actually get there. When I've set goals like that, I've been shocked at what I achieved, like things that never in my life I expected. So it's worth having some BHAGs. Big, hairy, audacious goals. What I will say is that those are great to set for yourself. It is important to have motivation because that's what's going to drive you and that's what's going to inspire you and others. Think of somebody who's achieved great things and who you really admire. Have they ever said, oh, I set SMART goals, or that was the reason they were successful?
I have not personally heard that.
I have heard because something was driving them. They cared about something. It mattered to them. So what matters to you? What motivates you? It doesn't have to be what motivates me. What motivates you? Is it helping people? Is it money? Is it freedom? Lots of different things motivate different people. But the best thing you can do is take, all right, what am I trying to achieve? And tie it to, what do I actually care about? For me, I want to know that I'm helping people, that I'm making the world a better place, even in small incremental ways, that I am making life a little bit easier for others, and that has ripple effect. I can tie that to a lot of things that I do. It also helps me pick out what things are worth focusing on or not. With my talking about food and stuff like that and weight loss, because that is something that is pushed on women so much, something that helps me a lot when I'm feeling pressured on that is looking at that and saying, is that something that affects what I truly care about? Maybe I want to be a size 2 because people are nicer to me when I am. But the fact is, my focusing on that instead of focusing on helping others, focusing on what I really care about, learning something new, it takes me away from my focus. So that's how I'm able to separate myself from something that's not helpful to me, but that's really easy to get sucked into. That was a little overly personal, but whatever. We're friends here. It can be a little tough if you're setting those for a team, because the whole point of BHAGs is that they're outrageous or audacious, whatever you want. They're not realistic. They're crazy. And if you're putting that on yourself, that can be, I don't know, interesting, fun, challenging. If you're doing that for someone else, it can make them feel really defeated. And this is something I see a lot where CS doesn't get to set their own goals and metrics for what they should achieve in that year. It's like someone just names a number and that's what you're supposed to get. If you are a CS leader, or even if you're not, if you're a CSM, don't be afraid to go to the person above you who has told you this is the goal and ask them, where are we getting this number? I'm just trying to understand, based on past performance, how we're going to get there. Because as a leader, you can maybe experiment and do some new things. You can encourage your CSMs to experiment and do some new things, but you have more freedom to do that as a leader than they really do. There's always going to be some concern with, is what I'm doing okay? Do I have to check with my boss? Am I going to get fired if I don't do things exactly the same way we've always done them? And I see that people set goals like, our retention rate is at 80%. We want it to be at like 97 by the end of the year. Or I see all the time people setting retention rate. We have a goal of 100% retention, not 100 NRR, 100% retention. Nobody's going to churn. If no one is leaving, that means that you probably don't have very many clients. Honestly, there's going to be a bad fit here and there. I have never seen a company that's doing really well, that's growing, have zero churn. The ones I have seen have 100% retention have 30 clients. And that's fine if that's where you want to stay. But if you're a company that is also aiming to grow and grow rapidly, that requires a lot of pivoting. And pivoting leads to sometimes an inconsistent experience, or sometimes the people you were serving in the beginning aren't the people that you're serving anymore. So there needs to be some flexibility, whether it's in your goals or your plans or your metrics. There's just too much that's unrealistic out there. In order to achieve those goals, we need that level of motivation. So setting one for yourself that is a little out of the ordinary, a little crazy is great. Don't do that for your team. It's just going to make them feel like, what the heck is the something else that's great to do is involve them in the discussion. Say, hey, these are our new goals. Here's how we got to this number. I have thoughts on how we're going to achieve that, but let's brainstorm a little bit. What do you think it would take to achieve that goal? It's all about the questions you ask. If you ask a crummy question, you're going to get a crummy answer. So saying, how do you think we'd achieve that, is a lot better than asking, do you think that would be possible? It just comes from a much more creative place. Now, if your team stonewalls you and says, that's not possible, we can't do that, don't just immediately argue with them. Listen to them. Take their feedback. Consider if it's valid. And if your team really feels like this is not doable and you agree with them, it's okay to go back to leadership and say, hey, we're looking at this. We're trying to come up with creative solutions. Here's what we've come up with. We're concerned about the ability to hit that number. This seems like a more realistic target. Maybe we could use that number as an accelerator. So it's still on the table. We still want to get there. We're still incentivized to get there. But this way, it's not, why bother? The one other thing you want to consider in goal setting is, what resources do you need? Figure out, like, all right, these are the things I need. What do I already have? What am I missing? What do I need more of that I already have? Where can I get it from? And who do I need to involve to help me get those things? So these are equal parts of what you need to do to figure this out. And finally, a goal is not a plan. You can have all the goals you want, but if you don't actually put it on your calendar, it's not going to happen. I think a to-do list that is not on your calendar is a wish list. It's just, to be realistic, it has to be scheduled. And that's when you really know your priorities, when you're willing to say, I am blocking off time in my day to do this. And this is a priority. With a goal and creating a plan, what do you have to do? You have to chunk. Because when you're thinking about a goal, it can seem really overwhelming. And you can get stuck in that sort of blank page of it all of, where do I even begin? I used to have a really awesome worksheet for chunking things down. And I'm happy to say that you don't need it anymore, because there is an awesome AI tool that will do it for you. It's called Goblin Tools. It's free. I will link it in the show notes, but it's called Goblin Tools, goblin.tools. And then you go to the magic to do and you type in whatever it is that you want to achieve, and it will break it down into small chunks for you. And if one chunk is too big, you just hit a button and it'll click and it'll break that down into even smaller chunks for you. It is absolute game changer to me. It takes something that's big and overwhelming and turns it into something manageable. And I've talked about this before, but it's like the difference between, okay, I have to create a whole onboarding plan for a company I haven't worked at versus I need to send 4 emails today. I'm going to send 4 emails to these different customers who I know are successful and find out what they did in their first 90 days. And I'm going to send something to the data analyst to see if they can crunch some numbers to look at their behavior so that we can see facts versus what they remember. So we get the qualitative and quantitative, right? Sending 4 emails, a lot easier than, oh my God, I have to plan this whole, I have to figure out where to start on this whole process. Having something that can do that for you takes away so much mental load. Oh my God. And it's already written down for you. And finally, there's a plan, the best laid plans. And then there's a habit. A habit is something that you're likely to do automatically. Hopefully, it's a habit for you to brush your teeth. You don't really think about it. You just sleepily go in there and do it. You want to find a way to make working towards your goal a habit. Again, that's creating very small pieces. Make it easy. Tie it to something you already do. You can tie it to, oh, I always get coffee at 10 o'clock. So right when I come back to my desk with my coffee, while I'm drinking it, I am going to work for 20 minutes on my goal. It can be as little as 20 minutes. That's fine. So long as you're doing something and that you're not trying to make it perfect. Make it messy. Just get first drafts. I hate doing things messy, but it has been proven to me that it works, and that I don't have to turn in something messy, but this way I'm getting the thoughts out of my head and it's moving me forward. No one has to see the messy versions. Make it a habit, tie it to something that you like, make it small, easy, rewarding. You want something to do, check something off, find a way to feel good about it once you've done that 20 minutes or whatever you've set aside for yourself to work on. It is important when building a new habit to tie something positive to it for it to stick. Because the best way to go about this is to get it so just like automatically you're working on this every day, because it's just a part of your day before the day comes in and decides for itself where you're going to go and what you're going to do. And finally, something that I like to do for myself is to leave breadcrumbs. If you think of Hansel and Gretel, how they left breadcrumbs to follow. What I mean by this is, as you're finishing up, as you're finishing a thought, just write down tomorrow, pick up and say whatever you were going to do next with this project, because it's, you get into a flow and sometimes you don't want to stop, but you have to. So if you have to stop, you just give yourself some breadcrumbs. Doesn't have to be understandable to anyone else. You can just say, next, I was going to talk about this and this because X. And I found that really helpful to then not spend 10 of the 20 minutes that I'm going to work on this staring at a screen going, where was I? What's next? So those are my much more practical and brain-friendly ways of setting goals and actually achieving them. This is incredibly important in CS, where it can be tricky to prove our value sometimes, only because that's done slowly and cumulatively. So you want to make sure you're tracking those results, that you are effective in working towards your goals, and that they freaking, because they do. All right, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me. There will be links in the show notes for everything I talked about. If you are interested in working more with me, if you like the kind of stuff I teach, make sure to get on the wait list for CSLA. So that's provansuccess.com/CSLA. And in the meantime, until next time, take care of yourself, get some rest, and make sure to share this with your CS besties. Talk soon, and here's to your success.